Agustá Falchiroiv Eg Aglora Cardia. Welcome along to tonight's edition of The Late Session. Tonight's programme very much with the emphasis on the Illan Pipes. My guest in studio is Brian McNamara, and we'll also hear music from David Power from last year's Skull Sour Willie Clancy. And we'll take our weekly look at what's on in the world of traditional and folk music. Fanna Gillian. And we're going to start off straight away tonight with a track, a nice selection of hop jigs here from Brian McNamara's new album, Fort of the Jewels. Hop jigs, top the candle and do it fair, starting off tonight's edition of the programme from the new album from Brian McNamara entitled The Fort of the Jewels. And Brian joins us live in studio tonight. You're very welcome to the programme, first of all, Brian.
A pleasure to be here, Anya. Thank you.
Tell us about those hop jigs, first of all, maybe. We don't hear hop jigs that often, do we?
No, I'm quite fascinated by them myself. I very fortuitously came across them when I was converting some of my dad's old recordings. He's got a great wealth of reel-to-reel recordings, and I was converting them onto a more permanent format, a CD format, over the last couple of years. And I came across these two tunes played by two fiddle players from our locality back in South Leitrim of the Riley family, Frank and Pat Riley. And it was just great to even hear them talk about them and to play the first one, and then separately you'd hear Frank introducing the next one. He says, this is another one of Kennedy's. Now, the Kennedy in question was Peter Kennedy, a great fiddle master from down the road in Ballinamore, who would have been the teacher of Pat Riley's father. And it was just a great connection to the locality. And that second one in particular, it seems to be such a rare tune. It hasn't turned up in any of the old manuscripts and or none of the old published collections. And I've trawled through them in great detail and hasn't been found. So I'm just delighted to give them an airing.
It's great to do. And yourself and indeed the other members of your family have done quite a lot of work in terms of, I think, both preserving and bringing out and publicising the music of South Leitrim over the past number of years. And it's something that you obviously feel is very important.
I guess that's really primarily why I'm doing the recordings in many ways. The music's very much before me. I'd like to see the music emphasised first, and the repertoire is so important, and I think there's been something very unique identified about the repertoire of South Leitrim, and as long as that needs, I feel, to be preserved, it needs to be heard to be preserved, and that's a really primary motivation to continue doing this type of work and to give it airings through these type of recordings.
Is there a lot more of it there? I mean, is there material there, say, that you haven't come across yet even?
Well, a lot of, yes, I believe there is. But even of what has been discovered to date, we're talking about a wealth of tunes handwritten in manuscripts. Some of them don't necessarily suit the pipes so well. Some of them do. Some of them are tunes that can be found in other collections, and you have to start cross-checking to be able to verify that. And then you find that some of them just don't seem to turn up on any of the other published manuscripts. And then you realise, wait a minute, we've got something really important here, and they need to be documented in a musical form.
And do you come across a lot of, say, tunes which would appear in other collections or would have been played, but these are variations on them in different,
yes,
in different settings and
indeed,
so on?
Indeed, which is lovely in itself. You can hear the local take on the tune. But then the two tunes just we played there, and I mentioned, are through the oral tradition. They weren't written down in any manuscript. My dad had in 1963 gone down to Pat Riley's home and with his heavy reel-to-reel recorder on the back of his bicycle recorded these tunes, and years and years, 50 years later, we're listening to them and they're so well preserved and they're just so almost original again.
How much stuff has been lost forever, do you think?
Oh, well, gosh, we can only hypothesise, but I think a lot. In fact, there's a very tragic story about a manuscript that was in a house, and when they were retouching the house, it's about 20 years ago, it was regarded, well, its importance was not understood at the time, and it was thrown out into the garden while the house is being repaired, and then a big wet day came, as it does in Leitrim, like everywhere else in Ireland, and that was bye-bye to the manuscript. We have no idea what was in it.
Talk to me a little bit, let's move a little bit from the past and into the present, and about music in County Leitrim at the moment. And how, I mean, I know you're not living full-time in Leitrim, but you're still very much connected with what's going on musically there, I think.
Yes, I guess it's in my blood. I did grow up there, and when I went to college and thereafter, I've been living outside of Leitrim, but with my parents still hale and hearty down there, I get down there as regularly as possible. And there's a very, very vibrant scene there. My dad is a very, very active teacher. I think he's out of the house most evenings giving what he can to further the tradition. But that's just him. And there are many, many other teachers and instructors and musicians right across the county. And of course, we have Drumshamba Summer School, which is a very well known school, the Joe Mooney Summer School. And we have the John McKenna Society. So it's still very much represented on the musical scene. Perhaps not nearly as strong as it was in the late 1800s or early 1900s. But I think we have a very proud tradition that's still very much alive.
I would have always, if I'd been thinking about the music of County Leitrim, would have thought of flutes and fiddles. So where did the piping tradition come from?
Well, that's correct. I think it's a very astute observation. Yet the piping tradition in the south area of Leitrim, where I'm from, the neighbouring parishes, was probably as strong as anywhere else in the country in the late 1800s. And I actually attempted to document that in my last CD, or my first solo recording, A Piper's Dream. And there were, you know, maybe 10 pipers in the locality. Two of those became very well known afterwards, after emigrating, as many people did. You know the history Leitrim has had of emigration. Two of them I just mentioned, Sergeant James Early and James Quinn, became known as Old Man Quinn, both emigrated from the same parish myself, Ahavas, and became great friends of the great collector Francis O'Neill, and contributed greatly to his works, and you see many, many references to them.
Sergeant Early's Dream, for example, was the same man.
Exactly the same man, yes. A flute player, actually, as well, but a great piper. And they were from two fields away from where I was born and reared.
Do you find it in any way annoying or irritating that people sort of say, a piper from Leitrim? Or I know your sister plays the concertina, for example. Do they say the same thing in
relation
to...
There's no tradition whatsoever of the concertina in Leitrim, so that's quite maybe more difficult to justify. Piper from Leitrim, well, I think, I won't say I at all get annoyed, but I mean, I'm very happy to be able to fill them in and I tell them, you know, there has been a huge tradition there, and it's just great to have the privilege of being seen to carry that on.
And you carry it on, not just here in Ireland, because you mentioned to me there just before we went on air that you travel abroad quite often doing workshops.
I do probably a lot more workshops outside of Ireland than I do in Ireland. And it's been great, particularly in the United States. They're a very active community over there, and they have multiple, what they call chinoles, workshops throughout the United States, which is a vast continent, evidently. And I've been very, very fortunate over the last 2, 3, 4 years to have been a guest participant, an instructor at just about most of them. And of course, we have many workshops throughout continental Europe as well. And it's wonderful. Music for me is completely about communication. It's very social. And that's one of the most engaging aspects of the whole exercise.
Are you teaching them just playing, or do you do reed making and that type of thing as well?
I do anything on reed making. I'm just about able to preserve my own reeds. And I think I don't have, well, my justification for all this is, first of all, it's an art form as well as a huge skill required. And I don't really feel I have enough time to practice playing the reeds that are made for me, never mind engage in making them. I guess I'm able to do that because I play two wonderful sets of pipes made by superb makers who have fitted great reeds. And I, as long as they're making great reeds for me, I don't see how I could attempt to ever make anything better. So I'm happy to do that.
As long as they're there to do the service every now and then and that sort of thing for you. Who made your pipes?
Well, I have two sets on the present recording. And the flat set is made by Jeff Wolf from Milltown Malby. I acquired that in late 1997. And my concertpiece set featured in the new recording is made by Benedict Kohler and David Quinn from Vermont in the United States. And I do have to say, having a good set of pipes is really cause a renaissance in my musical life for me. And it's very nice. The link there with Benedict is that he's a wonderful piper himself, and I think so wonderful that I really wish to have him heard. He'd never been on a commercial recording previously, and he duetted with me on three tracks in the present recording.
Was it difficult to persuade him to do that?
Yes, for only one reason, that he's an incredibly modest and shy musician, and not having recorded before, he was obviously wary about going into a studio. And I'll be the first to say that I never get the best out of myself in a studio. I don't think anybody can. I think that's not at all surprising when I think that music for me is very much a reflection of the soul, of the heart, of your psychological being. And you put yourself into an artificial environment of a studio, you can never, you know, you're not communicating with an audience. You're not at home in your own living room. So it's an artificial environment. Having said that, you do your best. And yes, that was the primary reason that Benedict was shy about it. But he's a superb musician. I think that's reflected in the recording. And I'm thrilled with the duet selections we got together.
Just staying on the subject of the album, Gráinne Hambly, who we'll be hearing from actually on a solo piece a little bit later on in the programme. But Gráinne Hambly joins you. And she was playing on that track actually that we played there.
Yeah, Gráinne and I go back a long way. We've known each other, I don't know how long. It just seems like forever playing music. One of the musicians I have always rated as top tier musician since the first time I heard her. A lovely concertina player, better known for her recordings on harp, and a wonderful accompanist, and it's been a real pleasure and privilege to have her on this recording. It works extremely well, I believe.
How much of a development, this is your second solo album now, how does it develop from the first one, from The Piper's Dream?
Yeah, I think it's, well, as all recordings are, a musical snapshot in time. And I think I'm on a musical journey. And as long as I'm alive, I believe there's a journey there, and we change as people. Hence, if music is a reflection of the person, it's got to change as well. So there's a greater understanding, greater wisdom, or a different understanding at a point in time. And I think certainly the contribution of this album is there's a new set of concert pitch pipes there, which I believe has greatly enhanced my ability to express myself musically. Also, I'm longer playing the flat set of pipes, which I acquired in 1997. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm growing to understand the instrument. It's hard to believe it takes so many years, but I believe every day I play, I'm learning something new about the instrument. It's almost like, not being a parent, I can't be sure of this, but I believe it's a bit like nurturing a child, and you're preempting how it's going to move and how conditions are going to affect it and what you're going to have to do with it. And a lot of, well, what's happened is 4 more years of practice, and really it's quite amazing. There's a lot more, I think, of the unconscious rather than the conscious. I think I reached a point where it's actually, I find in awe myself, just sit back, and if I'm practicing, and not to think about the music, to just allow pure expression from the heart. And then you realize, wow, what was happening there? Mm. It's a lovely, lovely feeling. And it's very much more of the unconscious coming to play than the conscious.
Actually. And you actually find that as the years go by, that you're playing like that more and more. That tends
I
to
do.
Happen more
I'm not.
Often.
I'm not at all dictating in what direction it goes. I just try to love it and live it, because it means so much to me. And I just want it to be a natural expression of how I'm feeling. And that's why, you know, you can feel very different from day to day, and your music will sound very different. I'm a very different person to what I was 4 years ago, and I think my music is reflecting that. And I find that actually fascinating itself. But I'm not modelling it to anybody. I suppose it's a sense of being self-content, of being happy where you are musically, and that. And I heard a great expression. It's not original, but I heard another wonderful musician I have great respect for use of expression about being sincere to yourself, finding the truth within yourself. And I think that's what my music is. It's expressing what I am. And not trying to categorise it, not trying to pigeonhole it, not trying to compare it. It's me.
And what you mentioned a little bit earlier on there about not being completely at ease in the studio environment and that is obviously a restriction in terms of expressing yourself.
Absolutely. And it's, I tend to want to, as a scientist, I suppose, I tend to think in terms of quantities. I was going to say maybe I'll try and get 80% of myself out of myself in the studio, and if I can get that, I'll probably be happy with myself. But it's an impossible environment to... Okay, in some ways, it may be more technically perfect because you've got the possibility of doing that. That doesn't interest me, and I think that's what this album, for me, is all about, was the spontaneity. I did totally intact takes, usually first take or maximum second take. There's no edits, no overdubs, no fillers, no nothing. And that's the way for me, way I want to hear my music now.
You may not be totally happy with the studio environment, but you seem to be very much at ease with the whole process of putting the recording together, putting the CD together, getting it out there and launching it and so on.
Well, third time around, I guess it, I won't say it gets easier. You know the hurdles that you're likely to encounter. You certainly know the stages and developments that are required. I think I'm very certain before I ever start on it, I have a concept in my head, and that concept carries me through. It's very much realization from everything to selecting the tunes, deciding on the dates of recording, who's going to be on it. Before I go into studio, I know almost what order I want my tracks in. I certainly know exactly what tunes and what selections. Everything to choosing colours, choosing layout, writing the notes. I don't want to come across as a control freak, but it's very much me. I mean, it's my concept. And I want that realised as I visualise it, I guess. So if I'm comfortable, yes, it's because I've got a very clear concept usually in my head, so why this is being done. And I think it has to be a contribution to the scene. I use analogy with maybe my academic work, as you know, I work in academia, and I always think if I want to read a research paper, it must make a contribution to the scene. It must be a substantial development on existing body knowledge or contributing to the existing body of knowledge. It's very accessible to make CDs, we know nowadays. I'm only interested personally in listening to those which I regard as being definitively making a contribution to the tradition. Now, it's up to others to judge whether I'm doing that, but that's what I'm about and trying to achieve.
And that's what you're hoping that maybe in 20, 30, 40 years' time that is what your work will stand as.
It would be delightful if that was to be how people would see it at that point.
It's going to be launched next weekend, first and foremost.
Very happily. The organisers, Willie Clancy Summer School, are very happy to have it launched as part of their launch series down there on Sunday afternoon, 4 p.m. The Convent Spanish Point in Milton Malby, and then I'll have a big night in Leitrim on July 18th starting at 8 p.m. Drumshamble Community Centre. It's the first night, kicks off the Joe Mooney Summer School, and actually I'm just back in from the States on that morning, but I'm teaching in the Catskills at the Irish Arts Week the week before that, so I don't know what type of physical condition I'll be in, but I'll probably be on a musical high anyway.
Well, listen, the very best of luck with it. Congratulations. It's a lovely production, and the very best of luck with the launch. It's called The Fort of the Jewels. Tell us a bit. We're going to listen to, I think, a couple of hornpipes to finish off. And for a South Leitrim man, I think these are West Clare hornpipes?
Yeah, gosh, I had to compromise there. I actually learned them from my great friend and pipe maker, Benedict Kohler, who joins me on this track. And I think it's only nice if people get a chance to hear him. These were two that he had learned in turn from Patrick Orso, a duet playing Patrick Orso and Garo the Holleran, the Clare man. And first one's called Mrs. Crotty's, and the second one is The Humours of Tully Crine.
Brian, thanks for coming in to talk to us.
Pleasure, thank you.
And Kerry. Thank you.
Mrs. Crotty's Hornpipe and the Humours of Tully Crine from Brian McNamara and Benedict Kohler there in duet from Brian's solo album Fort of the Jewels, which is being officially released in Milltown Malbay next week and a couple of weeks later at the Joe Mooney Summer School in Drumshambo in County Leitrim. And our thanks to Brian for coming in to join us on the programme tonight. Well, we're going to return to Skull Sour Willie Clancy now, and for the last few Sunday nights we've been playing music for you recorded at the Illan Pipes recital during last year's Skull Sour Willie Clancy, and we're returning there now. And we'll let Gay McKeown, the chairman of Napeabri Illan, introduce tonight's Illan Piper, who is David Power.
He's a lovely piper. He's learned from a number of pipers in the Waterford area, and I know he's had a lot of influence and teaching from Tommy Carney, who I hope is here tonight. And David was the inspiration behind the recent CD of Tommy Carney's Piping. It's a great CD. So I'd like you to welcome David Power. He's going to play a concert pit set of pipes made by Alan Fromont.
Thank you very much. The first set of tunes I'd like to play for you is a set of hornpipes. The first of those hornpipes I learned from the great Peter Carberry from Longford, and he's in the audience here tonight. I can see him mortified down there at the mention of his name. The second tune is called Madame Bonaparte.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. As Gay McKeown mentioned earlier, during the year I was involved in the production of a CD of our great teacher in the Waterford, Kilkenny, Wexford area called Tommy Carney. It's a beautiful piece of work. There's some gorgeous tunes on it, and this slow air that I'm going to play is one of them. It's called Ur Canuck Cén Mhic Áinte. Thank you. The last set of tunes is a set of jigs. The first one is the Frieze Breeches, and the second one is one that I've recently awoken to when I listened again to Leo Rowson's King of the Pipers recording called The Bride's Favourite.
Thank you.
David Power from County Waterford, now living in New Jersey in the United States, finishing off his selection of tunes there with those two jigs. And that was recorded at the Illan Pipes Recital at Skull Sour Willie Clancy in Milltown Malbay last year. And next Sunday night on the programme, we'll have our final insert from those recordings at the Piping Recital. And we'll hear from the County Donegal piper, Ciarán Mac Felemy.